Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, August 8th. I'm Ray Graff. In the market for a new home? Plan on listing your property for sale? Well, aren't you in luck? We have two real estate pros in the studio today to answer your questions. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate and Renata Lewis of Keller Williams Capital District are waiting for your questions right now. Give us a call at 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. Of course, you may also email the program at voxpop@wamc.org, and we'll get to as many emails as we can. But the number is 800-348-2551. Real Estate, Renata, Alexander, your calls coming up on Vox Pop right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Say, are you buying or selling a home or residential property? Well, you are in luck today. We have two real estate pros in the studio to answer your questions. Alexander Monticello of Monticello Real Estate specializes in residential sales for buyers and sellers in the Capital Region. Renata Lewis is with Keller Williams Capital District, also leads the Renata V. Lewis team. She is a go-to source for real estate industry insight and advice. Always great to have this dynamic duo on the program. Alexander and Renata, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Great being here.
Okay. Our microphones work. Our headphones
Woo-hoo.
Work. We're
yes.
ready to roll. The number is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. And you can also email us if you wish at voxpop@wamc.org. But again, the number is 800-348-2551. Phone line's already loading up. Anything we want to touch on before the show starts?
Market is good.
Yeah.
Inventory is still low. So we're still looking for sellers to sell.
Any fear from potential buyers that the Fed is going to knock interest rates up again?
I haven't heard much of that.
No, it's still low, but...
I mean, historically, we're still at a very good interest rate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the rates, they've crept up over the last few months, but... And I think that's pushed some buyers into the market.
Yeah. And I think another rise is coming, another 0.25% coming soon.
Right.
Well, the number here is 800-348-2551. We'll go right to the phones then, shall we? Melinda in Pittsfield. Melinda, you're on.
Hi. I'm wondering how much is this a good time to sell a home? I have to sell my mother's home. I would rather not sell it, but we owe a lot of money to the bank on a reverse mortgage, and we're going to have to sell. So is this a good time? It's not only in general, but I heard that the summertime is the time that people buy. If I wait until the fall, is that going to mess me up? And do you think that I should go high, or should my realtor is advising to go lower and then have some kind of bidding war, but I think maybe she just doesn't want to work hard enough. I don't know.
Okay, no names, please.
Melinda, yeah, I think generally now would be a good time to sell because inventory is still low, as Renata mentioned. And, you know, clients that I'm meeting with now who are thinking about selling, often it can take 2 or 3 weeks to get the house ready anyways. I am recommending at this point, if you're in the first or second week of August, probably makes sense to spend a few weeks getting the house ready and putting it on the market right after Labor Day, because right after Labor Day, there will be an increase in buyer activity as folks try to get in before the end of the year. As far as pricing goes, you know, obviously you want to try to price it for what it's going to sell for. That's ideally how you would list it and price it. Market value is a little tricky. It can be subjective, but the best advice I can give you is talk to 3 different realtors, get a sense from them as to what they think the real market value is, what it's going to sell for, and then maybe average the 3 of them or try to price it somewhere in the middle.
And one other question is, I heard that there's a little bit of asbestos in the basement, not a lot, and I heard that you can get something where you wrap the pipes instead of having it removed. What do you think of that, and is there a way that I could take the asbestos out myself? I know it's dangerous and stuff, but I was thinking maybe if I did it myself, would I what I'm concerned about is disposing of it. I don't want to just put it in with regular trash.
Well, yeah,
it's
a good plan.
Will they take asbestos from a non-professional?
You're in Massachusetts?
Yep.
New Jersey is where the house is.
So I can't speak to New Jersey law, but what I can tell you is in New York State, the homeowner can remove the asbestos themselves, and they can actually put it on the curb for pickup. As crazy
really?
As that sounds, yeah, they have to call and just identify, you know, call the waste hauler and let them know. But as crazy as it sounds, the homeowner can dispose of it themselves on the curb. But I think you're right. You're onto something. Wrapping it generally is probably the best way to approach it. It's a good insulator, so keeping it on the pipes is beneficial to the new homeowner.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Good luck.
Thank you, Melinda. We appreciate it. 800-348-2551, the number, 800-348-2551. It's Vox Pop Real Estate Today. And let's go to line number two and Steve in Schoharie. Steve.
I have a question. Thinking of purchasing a house but have to sell the existing house. Do you recommend having the house inspected by an independent person, licensed person, prior to listing the house so that any issue or potential issue could come up and I could address it so that buyers or buyer inspector doesn't find it, and then they walk away?
Well, you know the house best. So if you think that there may be some potential majors, it would probably be a good idea to get a home inspector in there to help you evaluate what needs to be taken care of. What I usually tell my clients is, you know, each home inspector has different eyes and ears, and there could be times that even though you've had a home inspection, someone different that comes through may also point out, you know, other things that come up. So it doesn't necessarily get rid of all the issues, but if there is a big major, I would say both inspectors would point that out and help you, you know, remove it.
Okay, and then how do I go about finding quality inspectors through my agent? How do you recommend?
Well, we have a network of inspectors that we work with that we trust. So your agent should have, you know, at least three names to share with you. I would do your due diligence, look them up online, look at the Business Bureau, you know, give them a call, see who you like best, and get them in the house. Anything that you do address or you find out during a pre-home inspection, you do have to disclose if it doesn't get addressed. So if there is a major, say asbestos is found in the basement, and if you don't take care of that or if you don't wrap it or if there is an issue, you now have to disclose it when you are selling the house. So just beware of any findings. They have to be taken care of before you market the home or they have to be disclosed. It can vary in different states, however.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks,
you're
Steve.
Welcome.
Do you, as seller's agents, ever come into a situation where the buyer's inspector, I assume the buyer, the prospective buyer pays for the inspection and picks the inspector, says, well, this, and this is wrong with the house. And you say, well, wait, can we get a second opinion here? In other words, is there a range of possible inspection outcomes?
Well, yes. The major, again, it may vary state to state. In New York State, it's a $1,500 threshold. So if there is something that comes up that is deemed to cost a $1,500 fix or replacement or higher, it gets alerted or pointed out on the home inspection. At that point, both the buyer and the seller will get estimates to figure out what that replacement or that repair will cost to see if it truly is a major.
Okay. I guess my point is, I assume you both have trusted inspectors that you work with generally, and someone maybe that you don't know comes in and says, well, this is clearly wrong with the house. Will you often then have your inspector in to take a look and say, well, you know, you're not quite right about this.
Yeah, absolutely. The tricky thing about the law in New York State is that if a licensed home inspector identifies a major issue, that in and of itself gives the buyer the right to cancel the contract.
Right.
So, you know, it becomes a little bit of a game of chicken and ultimately trying to figure out, is the buyer really concerned about this issue or are they trying to beat the seller up over the price?
Yeah.
And so we try to identify what is the goal here of the buyer. Do they still like the house or are they legitimately concerned? But absolutely, getting a second opinion is really important to verify whether the inspector is right.
Is a game of chicken sort of playing hardball? Is that common? Do you find that a lot?
I don't think so. If anything does come up, and these are the conversations you're having with both your buyers and your sellers, and should something come up, that inspector is not a professional in whatever item he calls a major. So that's where the estimates come into play.
Hmm.
I think the chicken comes in maybe, you know, the buyers will get a really high estimate, the sellers will get a really low estimate, and then we kind of try to meet in the middle.
Hmm.
So a little bit of that maybe. However, I think both parties are protected when it comes to the estimates to be sure that you know, they are getting good quotes and whatever that major was is a fair major that was called out.
It's Real Estate Today on Vox Pop. Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello, 800-348-2551. If you have a question about buying or selling a property, 800-348-2551 is the number, and we'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here with you on a Wednesday afternoon. 800-348-2551 is the number. Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello are here to answer your real estate questions. And we go to Judy in Woodstock. Hello, Judy.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good. You're on.
I have a comment about inspectors. I bought my house about 7 years ago, and I had an inspector, and he had all kinds of certifications. And he gave me a photographic log of everything that he had found, and it turned out that he was incompetent. He told me there was a problem with a chimney that wasn't a chimney at all, and he also didn't spot the fact that there was there are two heating plants in the house, and one of them was dead. And I know that the seller's agent hid that information, because it turned out that a buried oil tank had supported that furnace, and it had been pulled properly and certified. And you would think that a realtor would advertise that fact. But this realtor did not want me to notice that one of the furnaces didn't work. Fortunately for me, I noticed it. And I also stopped by and talked to the seller, which the realtors don't want you to do. And he happened to mention there was a problem with the heat in that part of the house. So I knew what I was getting.
Hmm.
But I really should have, you know, complain to the realty board or something about this very well-known, prominent realtor.
What do you think?
And,
don't mention names, but let's get an opinion here from our realtors.
Well, it sounds like, where did the home inspector contact come from? Did you have a realtor representing you, or were you just working
they
with
weren't
this?
Really, they weren't really recommending anybody. They just had business cards in their office. And I picked the one who seemed to have the most certifications.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I mean, listen, I guess we can't vouch for everybody. And, you know, that's part of the office policy as well, as whoever you choose to work with, you know, do your due diligence, have coffee with them, see what kind of business they've done in the past. So,
I was fooled even after he gave me the report.
Hmm.
And by the way, this is my seventh house in my life.
Okay, so you know what you're talking
about.
Yeah, you know what you're talking about.
Well, it's a good thing you talked to the seller, and hopefully you negotiated the price on that.
Hey, Judy, thanks a lot. You know, that gives me an idea. Maybe on a future real estate program, in addition to you two great guests, we'll bring an inspector on.
Sure.
And do that as well. Let's go over to Jim in Wappingers Falls. Jim, you're on.
Thank you. Hi. Yeah, it's a comment that I have here regarding home inspectors. We bought a house. It was a house built in 1827. We were meticulous. We went through and we found the guy that was the head of the local home inspectors association locally here. And we thought, well, this guy's got to be good. And we hired him. And he went into the house to look for, you know, to do the full inspection of the house. And he came back, and we read the inspection. It looked really clean to us, and so we went ahead and picked up the house. When we moved into the house, we found out that none of the toilets worked.
Yikes.
All of the windows had been painted shut.
Oh, boy.
And this guy must have been on acid or something, because I didn't understand how you could do that as a home inspector and not do some really simple things like flush the toilets to make sure they work.
Would an inspector normally flush a toilet or open
absolutely
a window? Yeah,
yeah,
is that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, heavens, this guy was like out to lunch. We trusted him. And so for the home buyers out there, you know, hire an inspector, but at the end of the inspection, sit down with this person and say, hey, what did you do this? Did you do this? You got almost got
hey, Jim, were you at the inspection?
No,
oh,
no. I was out of town.
Okay.
You know, we hired this guy. We thought he was hot stuff. We paid him.
That's actually a good point, though. I always almost require that my buyer attends the inspection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Partly because I don't want that responsibility. I want to make sure the buyer is there in person
to flush the toilets.
To flush the toilets, open the windows, but also see exactly what the inspector is doing and seeing.
Yeah.
So that's really important.
We have four toilets in the house. None of them work.
Holy cow.
Ouch.
This guy was an idiot. And the horror is you can only go after him to get the amount you paid him back or her. Yeah. I don't mean to be just guys or
right,
you know, good guy or a girl that does the inspection.
Right.
But that's your limit of liability, or that's their limit of liability,
okay,
their fee.
Well, that's thank you for that. And I guess we're to some negative territory now. Jim, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. Our number here is 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. You guys want to share any anonymous horror stories from inspectors?
You know, I'm not going to say anything bad.
Do you know anything bad?
Listen, there's always stories.
Nah.
I think us realtors, if we've been in the business long enough, I could write a book.
Yeah.
What I will say is, you know, a home inspection is just not an inspection of the structure and, you know, it's of the house. Obviously, that's a very important aspect of it.
Yeah.
For me, I tell my clients, hey, guys, it's a tour of the insides, the guts of the house,
yeah,
where the shutoffs are, where the electrical is. You should be there if you're being represented by a buyer's agent, which many of these buyers were not. Those are the conversations that you're having with your buyer's agent. Your buyer's agent should be there. You should be there. The home inspector, you should be there. You guys are working as a team, and everyone is checking on the things that sometimes are not being checked.
Well, we had a good inspector, and we were there for our inspection. And, Renata, you know how it all turned out.
Fabulous.
Not that great, right? Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. The guy was very competent. Right? It was new first-time buyers. Not so competent. But, you know, you live and you learn. All right, let's go over to line two. And, Diana, you're on.
Hello. Just another comment regarding home inspectors.
Oh, great.
Our advice, being rental property owners and having owned our fifth residential property that we live in ourselves, would be to have an independent licensed plumber, licensed electrician, structural engineer, as opposed to a home building inspector, because any of us on the phone right now and in your listening audience can take the course and become, with little or no effort, become a licensed home inspector. And we've had horror stories told to us. So that's just my comment, and
okay,
I love the show.
Thanks a lot, Diana. We appreciate it very much. 800-348-2551. You know, it doesn't have to be a Bash Home Inspectors program. You could have any question you want here on the program.
It could be Bash Realtor.
Well, that's
always fun, too.
Let's go to line one and find out.
There?
We'll spin the wheel and take our chances. Jay in Gloversville, you're on.
Just out of curiosity question, my girlfriend and I have been looking for a piece of property in upstate New York, and it is like pulling teeth trying to get realtors to answer just basic questions about property. I didn't know if that was just a thing because maybe the pieces of property aren't very expensive we're looking for. They just don't want to waste their time with it or what.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
Jay, where are you looking?
We've been through about six pieces. We're looking Altamont area, like just south of 90 and west of 87.
And do you have a buyer's agent?
We have an agent. It's a family friend, and it's the same. It's not her. We give her all the questions we're looking for as far as has a perk test been done. There were wetlands listed in the listing, and then the realtor comes back with, we don't know about any wetlands, and just really basic stuff. And it's I just can't understand why it's obviously we're trying to buy something from someone and they should be providing us with information.
Yeah.
That's all I'm looking for because I don't want to get stuck.
Okay. Boy, a lot of negativity on this program. All right. What do you think?
Well, I.
Hang on. We got to go back to Jay here. Let's see. Jay, are you still there? Yeah, we had a little issue with the phone here. Okay. Jay, are you still there?
You there?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Go ahead.
Well, raw land is a little bit more difficult, especially if the seller didn't do anything to prepare that raw land to market. So if the listing agent doesn't have any information, it may not necessarily be her fault. It's just because there is no information that's provided. You know, if it's raw land that has been perked, you know, maybe tested and, you know, has as well, is there water access? Is it surveyed? You know, what does the plot plan look like? I understand the questions you're probably trying to get. They're either not working hard enough for the seller, not providing the information and just don't know to ask for it, or B, it's just not available. So again, I think it's just pushing, you know, provide your agent all the questions that are important to you, and it's just going to be a little bit more work on her end to get all that information done. And as a side note, when I'm working with raw land or any land, I always send you guys into the town to do a little buyer research for yourself. Hey guys, we're trying to buy this property. What does it look like?
Now, when you say when it's tested, what are you testing raw land for?
Well, if there's no public sewage, it has to be, there's a perk test that's involved.
Perk?
Yes, for septic systems.
Ah, okay.
So does it need to be a raised bed? Does it need to, can it be buried? How is it percolating? Do we need to bring in any extra dirt, any extra sand?
Mm-hmm.
So that's very important because sewage is a big part of a planning process when you're buying land and building.
Okay. Jay, we lost you there for a minute, but we got you back. Did you get most of that?
Is it connected?
You are
connected, yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Did you hear what I said?
Yeah, I okay, caught good. Most of it. As yeah. soon as I cut off, I turned the radio up and I could hear you. So, yeah
good, man,
I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I guess we'll just keep plugging away and
keep those questions. You're smart in asking all the questions and just, you know, she's got to do her due diligence for you guys. And listen, if you find something that you like, run to the town and they will give you everything that they have on file as well.
Oh, the town will?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Jay, good luck.
Thank you guys so much.
I hope you have success. Let's go over to Muhammad in Clifton Park. You're on.
Hi, how are you? Why is it so difficult to find a house? I have a couple of questions. Why is it so difficult to find a house under Section 8? And question two is, why don't you bring someone into the radio station one day and from the government side to talk about those issues?
Oh, interesting. That's another good idea.
That is, actually.
All right, so getting to Muhammad's question.
Muhammad, you're talking about renting property for Section 8?
No, Section 8 has a program that you can buy a house. You probably know about it because you're a real estate agent. They have some program for themselves that you put a certain amount of money into the house, and Section 8 will buy you a house, and you pay Section 8. So what basically means is instead of paying for life, whatever the time the government pays for it, basically the government will pay it for 10 years, and then 10 years later the house is yours, and then you take care of the property and pay taxes, whatever.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm actually not familiar with that. I know there's a great program here in the Capital Region called the Affordable Housing Partnership, and they work with a lot of the government-funded programs. There are some programs out there that assist with helping first-time home buyers save for a down payment, so down payment matching programs. But the Affordable Housing Partnership, and I think they've been on here at the WMC before, is a great resource.
Yeah, I mean, you have the Albany Home Bank as well.
Oh, the land bank.
Yeah, the land bank
would be a little different. Yeah.
Yeah, the land bank I think is a little bit more of what he's referring to. There's a lot of, well, maybe not. I don't know. I'm not too familiar with it either. I know that there is a lot of X's on a lot of houses in Albany and different areas that are being picked up by Albany Bank, land bank.
Interesting.
I'm not going to name the place that I live in,
okay.
But I even had a power yesterday since from 8 o'clock in the morning till 1:30 in the morning, and they have a community center, The community center had a power. We have a lot of elderly women, children lived there. They were heat and hot. Everybody was outside, and they could care less.
Oh, man, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Hey, well,
somebody should have this program with you, personally with you, from either a HUD or Section 8 department. I think you probably...
I think that's a great suggestion, Muhammad, and we'll take it over to our producer, Jim Lavoulis, at the end of the program. But thanks very much for the call. 800-348-2551 is our telephone number. It's Vox Pop. It's Real Estate Today. Renata Lewis, Alexander Monticello are here to answer your questions. And we go to Dean in Greenwich. Dean, you're on.
Hey, guys. Great show today.
Thank you.
I got a question for your guest. What's the most... the oddest thing you've ever found in a home that you were about to sell? Strangest oddity that you've seen in the
house. Like a defect or something somebody left in the house?
Oh, no. I mean something weird. Like, not a defect. Something odd.
I've got a good one.
All right, go.
So I'm showing a house, and I'm working with the buyers. I'm the buyer's agent. I was not forewarned. So we walk into the house. I'm not going to say where or how long ago. We end up in the basement, and in the basement, there were coffins.
No!
Yes.
Full coffins?
Full coffins.
Holy mackerel.
Freaked us out. We should have known, because when we walked in the main room, there was a huge organ, you know, with all the piping going up the side of the wall. Listen, everybody has different tastes.
Was it a funeral home, or was it vampires?
I believe whoever owned the home was... maybe a funeral.
Like an amateur funeral director? Yes. Oh, that's nice. That's
so, great. Yeah, so it freaked us out. I went down and I ran back up.
Oh, that's classic.
So, yeah, I'll never forget that.
All right, how about you, Alex?
You know, I think the weirdest thing is walking in on some people who are in bed.
All right.
You know,
what? This is
sleeping in bed.
This
Ray.
Is public radio, Alexander.
They were just sleeping.
Okay, fair.
Sleeping. When you know, you're oftentimes showing multiple units, and sometimes the tenants don't get out of bed. And
right.
It's Saturday at 9 a.m.
Yeah.
And you're opening doors, and people are under sheets.
Ah.
It can be uncomfortable.
Well, Dean in Greenwich, thank you for asking, my friend. We appreciate that. That's. That was a good one. 800-348-2551 is the number. It's Real Estate Today on Vox Pop. And let's see. Doug in Canaan. Doug, you're on.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Certainly.
Hey, quick question for your guest. My girlfriend and I bought a lovely little cabin here in Canaan about 12 years ago. Now, we were told, you know, we received that call that one often gets before, you know, you close the deal, which is there's some other people interested. And they are really, you know, they're going to go higher. So you're going to have to go higher. So we did. Now, the reality is, in hindsight, looking back 12 years, we did pay too much for it. But I think that has more to do with the fact that it was right prior to the crash and everything was inflated. Mm-hmm. So, but nevertheless, it makes me wonder how does one know? I'm not suggesting anything, you know, shaky on the part of your profession. But I mean, how do you determine when someone tells you that, if that is in fact the case? Is there any way?
Doug, when I'm representing a buyer and I'm told that there are multiple offers or maybe multiple offers, one of the things we do is an escalation clause where we will offer, say, $1,000 over the next highest offer up to a certain dollar amount. We ask them if they're going to invoke the escalation clause. They just have to provide us, you know, a copy of the first page of the contract. My experience, to be honest with you, if most real estate professionals are not going to fib about having multiple offers, because, you know, we do business all the time, and if they fib once, they often lose their reputation. So in my experience, when somebody's saying they have another offer, another agent is saying they have another written offer in hand from a qualified buyer, they're likely telling the truth. And unfortunately, I always tell my clients the only way we'll ever know for sure if they're telling the truth is if they show us a copy.
But they don't have to do that?
They don't have to do that. Or they lose, or you lose the house, right? If you don't win out, then you know they had the other offer.
And it's not standard.
But you are, at the end of the day, you are sort of, you're just taking it on faith. There's really no.
Yeah, but I guess the way you can do it is by giving them an escalation clause, right? And saying, okay, fine, I'll pay $2,000 above that highest offer. Just show me the offer. And if they really did, they likely probably would show you the offer.
Okay.
Right. And what I was gonna add is I don't think it's a mandatory form, but there is a multiple offer form that many times gets generated. So once there is another offer on the table, say you have 2, 3, 4 offers, which is happening in the current market, the listing agent will send the multiple offer form to all the buyer's agents that have the offer in place, letting us know that now your buyers have up to a certain time frame to improve their offers if they choose to do so, and submit them all by that date and that time where the seller is going to choose one.
Now, I remember a story, and I don't remember which of my friends mentioned this, but they were buying a house, and they put an offer in, and I think they were second on the list, maybe, and it was low, and they were never given a chance to raise the offer. In other words, the seller just said, okay, forget it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, right. The seller has the prerogative to take any offer they want or negotiate exclusively with any potential buyer. So if there's enough distance between buyer one and buyer two, and you know the seller doesn't want to get greedy and they like the financing, they may just go with buyer one.
All right. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Renata Lewis and Alexander Monticello here for another 20 minutes or so to answer your real estate questions. And we'll be right back. Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. Number is 800-348-2551. Real Estate Today. Interesting program with Alexander Monticello and Renata Lewis today. And we've shared some interesting tales. Let's see what else we can find out here. Jamie in Altamont. Jamie, you're on.
Good afternoon. A contributor to WAMC. Love the content all the time. Thanks a lot, Ray.
Thank you.
And just like to say, hello to the guests as well. I heard some negative comments and just was compelled to call in, being a home inspector myself, and just to make the statement that when looking for a home inspector, it's like looking for any other contractor that you're going to have in your home. Like, I would never allow someone into my home to do work if I hadn't vetted them or called references or verified their experience prior to hiring them. And I know sometimes, at least with real estate today, the breakneck pace that these houses are going, they're selling in 2-3 days, multiple offers. It's very important to make sure that all of the professionals that you have on your team are quality and qualified to perform the job. I myself, 30 years as an electrician before I got into the inspection business. And again, I just can't drive home the point enough that when looking for a home inspector, as looking for any other professional, or if you are hiring somebody to be on your team, you would vet them, look at their resume, verify their references, and make sure that they are what they say they are, and that they have the kind of experience necessary to perform a quality inspection that's thorough and comprehensive.
Ditto here, 100%.
And I think that's one of the great things about having a realtor, because most of the time there are relationships already there and the homeowner doesn't have to go in blindly and figure it out. There are a number of possible options. Hey, Jamie, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. This one came in via email from Karen. It doesn't say where Karen's from. Karen writes, "My husband and I are thinking of adding solar panels to our home. Would this be viewed negatively by potential buyers?"
Solar panels. The biggest thing is you want to make sure that you own them, meaning you're going to buy them, you're going to purchase them. They're not going to be a liability on against your mortgage, against your home. If you are leasing them, have an attorney look at that lease and in detail, because I've seen some crazy leases on solar panels that have stopped sales. Mm. So just be very careful. Do your due diligence. If you're going to stay in the home for a while, listen, it's something that's definitely on the rise, and people do like the green.
Yeah, and there's also, I think there's a local company here that you can lease solar off-site. So they have a solar farm, and you can actually buy the panels and have them put it on their farm and lease it from their space, which might be better than putting it on your roof.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not asking you your professional opinion, but in your personal opinions, if with your own homes, if you were to put solar panels on, would you buy them or release them?
I would buy them.
I would buy them.
Me too.
but I wouldn't want them on my home.
Really?
Well, the way it depends. The way my house faces, they would have to be on the front of my house. And I do feel that the curb appeal
I think it would look great.
Is not that great.
You know, I mean, it's just hopefully a personal in the next opinion. 3 or 4 years, you've this company out
Tesla.
There, right? Tesla, yeah. Right? That has these shingles that are, or, yes. or these solar panels that are in the shape of shingles.
That's
what I'm holding
I've
out for.
I've seen those in Aruba in my travels.
Yeah, in 5 or 6 years, I'll need to replace the roof. And if I can replace the roof and put solar at the same time, it probably makes sense.
Very interesting. Of course, you could always just put a big windmill up in your backyard.
I'm going to do that.
No? Renata says no. Okay, let's
I'm
go back to the phones. 800-348-2551. Brian in Kingston. Hello, Brian.
How you doing?
Good.
Good show.
Thank you.
Hey, I was curious on your opinion on how house foreclosures. My son keeps on looking at houses, and everything he seems to be looking at is in foreclosure. I was wondering if you would recommend it or not.
Is he a first-time home buyer?
Yes.
Is he handy?
I am.
Okay.
Nah.
Well, do you want to
do a
lot
of work?
Yeah, that's the question.
I don't mind.
Yeah, well, I guess if you're skilled at doing the work and you can really understand the house and you're willing to kind of take on a little extra risk and some unknowns, you know, you can get potentially some good deals with foreclosures. But I tend to be a little bit more conservative, and I think for a first-time home buyer, it's safer. The safer route is to go for a home that's been owner-occupied and maintained. Because there's always
Great.
Unknowns. There's always unexpected issues that come up, not only in the home, but potentially title issues that may arise in a foreclosure.
You do a search, title search,
well,
though.
There are title searches, but the problem is and you would get title insurance, not to say that you would take ownership of a property with title issues, but if you invest the money in a mortgage and a home inspector, and now you're 30 days into the process, and they eventually come forward and say, actually, we don't have clear title. There's a $10,000 lien, and we can't sell the house until this is resolved. You could be tied up for several months.
Okay. Well, Brian, good luck. Good luck, and get out the hammer. We thank you very much for the call. 800-348-2551. Marie in Poughkeepsie, Marie.
Hello?
Marie. I think Marie's...
Hello.
Oh, you're there. Hi. You're on.
Sorry. I'm on my cell phone. I'm going to pull over to take this call, though.
All right. 10-4. We'll wait.
All right. So here's my situation. I bought this home, new construction, in 2001. I'm looking to relocate and downsize around the year 2020 or 2021. I know that the air conditioning unit in my house is struggling. The question is, it's still working. Do I replace it now, or do I like hope it holds on and let the new owner deal with it?
Okay, good question.
It is a good question. I say don't fix it until it's broken. And if it's still running when you are ready to purchase it, I mean sell the house, you can offer a credit for it, or you could offer maybe a home warranty that will protect the future buyer for at least a year once they move in.
Is that a common thing?
It's really not. When I sold in Long Island, it was a lot more common. I do use it on any homes that I feel may have potential issues because it really is a nice just perk for the buyers.
So a warranty on the air conditioner?
Yeah, it's actually a home warranty.
A whole home warranty?
It is.
That's crazy talk.
It's great. It's really good. I wish it was a little bit more... Alex is shaking
yeah,
his head.
Yeah, I would be agreeing with Alex.
There's a little bit of fine print.
Well, there
I mean,
is.
They don't,
I mean, it's not
they don't
a
completely
whole house.
Cover everything.
Yeah. I mean, the HVAC, I think, maxes out at $3,000. So it's not going to cover everything. However, it's just an additional protection for the buyer.
And that's paid for by the seller. So the warranty, is there an outside underwriting insurance company that does that?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So the buyer is not suddenly going to have to fork out $15,000 to fix something.
No.
Or the seller, I mean.
As a listing agent, I would offer it on the house, and depending the plan that they choose, it's between $500 to $700, and it's the listing seller actually is protected throughout the entire time they are listed. Oh. So say that AC goes while you're listed, you can call one of the contractors and you'll probably get a better price if you have to replace it. Should that AC still continue to go, at least it gives peace of mind to the new buyers. And if it goes within the first year that the buyers own the property, then they get a discount on fixing or repairing.
One piece of advice for Marie. Marie, if you haven't already, I'd call a HVAC company there to get it serviced because it may just be a servicing issue and you might be able to give it some new life.
No, Marie, not true.
I have it serviced every year, which is why I think it's still working.
Okay.
And working well. But, you know, it was installed when the house was new and to put a new one in requires changing the Freon. This is not a trivial expense.
Got it.
Well, it also depends. Do you want top dollar for the house? And if you do, it may be time to replace it. And if you want to adjust the price a little bit based on the older air conditioner that may be going, that's a question to ask your realtor.
Okay, Marie, thanks a lot for calling. We go over to John in Schenectady. John, you're on.
Hi, everybody.
Hello.
Yeah, the reason I'm calling is I used to work for HUD, and I administered the home ownership program through Section 8. And you had a gentleman call a little while ago, and he was on track, but there were a few things that he said that aren't quite right.
Okay.
I'd like to clarify that, perhaps for you guys and him.
Splendid.
Section 8 does not buy you a house. What you do is you qualify for the home ownership program. A quick rundown of the parameters are, one, you either have to be working, employed full-time for 1 year, working 30 hours a week, making the federal minimum wage, which would roughly work out to be about $15,000 to $16,000 a year. You have to qualify for a mortgage yourself. Section 8 doesn't get the mortgage for you. You have to get that from a regular financial institution, you know, a bank, some kind of lender.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you have to qualify for the program by taking what's called a home ownership certification course.
Okay.
Most, you can go to like one of the community action programs in whatever community you're in, and they can direct you to a place that would run one of them those programs. So essentially what happens is, just like the Section 8 program, the portion of rent you pay under Section 8 is based on 30% of your household adjusted income.
Yeah.
And I won't get into that too much, but it's based on your income. And the home ownership program works the same way, essentially. They base, Section 8 will make a portion of your mortgage payment based on your household income. And it is a 30-year mortgage. You have to...
Okay.
Section 8 will help you for 15 years, and then after that, you're on your own. So it's always in the right direction on that. But Section 8 doesn't buy you the home. You have to qualify for a mortgage, and that right there is tough for a lot of people, unfortunately. The demographic, which is on Section 8, the bank won't give them a mortgage. But if they go to one of the home ownership certification courses, there are counselors there that can help you if perhaps you have credit problems.
Yeah.
Or for whatever reason, how to maybe get your income up to where you need it. And just one final thing, if you're disabled and getting like a Social Security disability, then you don't need to be working full time.
Okay.
To qualify for the program under that. So one last thing, I don't want to use up all your time, is if you do want somebody from a housing authority, there's a lot of good ones around. I know the executive directors and everything, but if I can make a recommendation,
all right,
I'm
well,
not going to say the fella's name.
Yeah, we'll have you.
You know where the August place to be is right now?
Yeah.
Call that housing authority, the executive director there.
All right.
I know him. He'd probably love to come on your program.
Okay, man. All right. Thanks very much. Thank you. The August place to be, what's that? Ravenna, right? I'm not sure. Let's go over to Dan in Middletown. Dan, you're on.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Give me a call because I'm currently selling my house. We're underneath contract, and the buyers are going through FHA. And I just heard some horror stories about their whole inspection process. I was just wondering if you could give any insight as to really what they look for when they're inspection, and approximately, like, how soon after we go into contract did they come out to do that inspection before we were looking to close? That way, in case anything does pop up, like how quickly I'd have to fix issues.
Yeah.
So that way I don't delay closing.
Okay. Fair enough.
Okay, so it's the standard 10 business days that the home inspection has to be completed. FHA does have some regulations when it comes to the appraisal and the home inspection. And the biggest ones is peeling paint. Your windows have to open. There can't be any broken windows. Railings.
Do they flush toilets?
Flush toilets. Yeah, you have to have plumbing. You have to have heating. And your roof can't be leaking. So Okay. Those are the big ones. Other than that, it's a pretty standard home inspection.
And they do that as part of the appraisal.
Right, yeah, the appraisal went through and everything went fine with that, but I guess they have a separate inspector come out on top of that?
Well, yes, the home inspector. So the home inspector actually should have been there before the appraisal.
The home inspector is not part of the FHA inspection.
Because I know that they had their own inspector come out, and then the appraisal occurred, but I thought the FHA had their own inspector.
Yeah, okay. So they hired a home inspector. That was all set. Then they ordered an appraisal. Part of the appraisal is the FHA asked the appraiser to look at those issues that Renata talked about.
Right.
And so there's no other third inspector.
An additional inspection.
No.
Right. No.
Okay, Dan, thank you very much. We'll quickly go over to line 6 here. And John in Altamont. John, you have about a minute.
About a minute. All right, real quick. I've been licensed to sell real estate for 35 years in the state of New York. Real quick, Jay, from wherever he was calling from, he needs a new realtor. Family friends don't do it. Part-timers don't do it. He needs a new realtor because land is the easiest thing. It's a layup for realtors. There's no inspections. There's perk testing, yes, but you know what? They're the easiest way to make money. I love land sales.
Okay.
Call me anytime, Jay. The other thing is the other guy that you just had that was commenting on the other guy about why aren't there availability of these houses that they can get through Section 8. Well, that guy corrected you on that. I know as people sell properties, there's a lot more that those places require as far as when they get into inspections. Simple example, basement stairs. You got a set of basement stairs going downstairs. Normal, fine, no problem, pass inspection. With some of these government programs, they want those spaces enclosed, which means they want a riser and a lift. So you got there's a lot of detailed stuff that nobody wants to comply with, so they're a pain in the butt. Nobody really wants to deal with it, so they pass on those buyers.
Well, John, I'm so sorry to say we're out of time here, man, but thank you very much for those comments, and we appreciate it very much. Quickly here, about 30 seconds, email from Robert in the town of Wright. Zillow invasion of privacy is the subject heading. Our house is not visible from the road, yet there are pictures on their site. What's up with that? That's from Robert.
It's called a drone.
Really? They fly drones around?
Well, maybe he's talking about interior photos. It's possible that the interior photos from the prior listing are on Zillow. Mm. And, you know, obviously like Facebook, right? Everybody's read those privacy statements on Facebook. Once you put it up there, it's owned by Facebook or Zillow.
Okay. Well, fair enough. All right. We're just about out of time.
Sorry.
Alexander Monticello, how do people find you on the World Wide Web?
You can go to our website at MonticelloNYS.com.
And Renata V. Lewis.
RenataHomes.com.
All right. Well, thank you both for being here today. Interesting program.
Thank you. Woohoo.
A little out of the box for this one,
Jay,
right?
I got an idea. You should be a home inspector. Market opportunity, Ray.
It may well pay better than
maybe
radio.
We wear enough hats.
I like it very much. Well, thanks a lot, both of you, for being here. Support comes from the Arkell Museum in Canajoharie, presenting Portraits and Landscapes, featuring works by Gilbert Stuart, Edward Gay, and Winslow Homer. More at arkellmuseum.org. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York, providing custom display solutions, interactive exhibits, rental gallery walls for special events, museum installations, and trade shows nationwide, empireexhibits.com. Daughters of Sarah, Albany, New York, providing seniors with transitional care and rehabilitation therapy as they move from hospital care to another level of care or home, daughtersofsarah.org. And the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack Chapter, working to protect ecologically important lands and waters of the Adirondacks for nature and people, nature.org/Adirondacks. Thanks again to Alexander Monticello and Renata Lewis for being here today. Thanks to Zachary T. Malloy, our engineer. Your phones were answered by Carol Lapani. Our producer is Jimmy the Hammer Lavoulis. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, oh my heavens, prepare your questions now. Tune in for another exciting edition of the Science Forum at 2 p.m. Right now, stand by for news.